Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Sindhu Joseph. Sindhu is the founder and CEO at Cognicore. Sindhu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Christian, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Likewise. So let's start with Cognicore. What problem is it solving in the marketplace?
So Cognicore is specifically purpose-built for the financial services and the wealth industry. One of the big problems that I have, I have traveled, all around multiple continents, around three continents. And one of the things that I kind of see pronounced, sitting in the Bay Area in Palo Alto today, is the wealth disparity between the wealthy and the poor. And when I kind of digged into that, the reason for that is not because people don't work hard enough. I think, at least in the US, we are known for being workaholic. So, we work two, three jobs to make money. We know how to make money, but there is a big portion of the society that does not know how to put money to work for them. And I think that's the difference between the wealthy and the poor. So financial advisors are usually the distributors of, managers of wealth. Unfortunately, today, financial advisors cover around 30% of the households, the high net worth, affluent, mass affluent community. There is, it does not make financial sense for them to cover, beyond that. I think AI has revolutionized every industry, and financial services no exception. So the focus of Cognicore and the Copilot platform that we have created is enabling financial advisors to scale to more households and probably reach around 70 to 80% of the household, and AI can actually allow that, handholding them through the operational efficiencies, as well as, reducing the administrative burden. But the most important thing the Copilot does is really be a companion for financial advisors to look over their shoulder, highlight accounts that are households that they need to prioritize, highlight opportunities and risks, and do that task for them so that, they can really focus on providing personalized advice and, scaling their firms.
So said another way, you have a significant portion of the population where by virtue of their net assets, it can be difficult for an investment advisor to cost justify spending time. But with the promise of AI, puts them in a position where they can now interact with that cohort because they can do it at scale.
Yes, exactly. And I think this is one big portion is, college students who are just entering the market. And there is another portion that is really below the mass affluent community. So these are the two groups. And I think really you can expand to these and democratize the access to wealth. So my personal vision is, how can we democratize the access to wealth? And I believe Cognicore is a means to get there.
What was the genesis behind the idea? What inspired you to start the company?
My background is in AI. I spent probably around 15 to 20 years building artificial intelligence solutions, much before the hype around the LLMs and all of those were around. So I'm passionate about this field. I think from childhood, I was one question that kind of escaped me always was how do we make decisions that as humans, how does intelligence work? And it always fascinated me. And I was always thinking about this macro, why we are here, what are we doing here, how do we get these intelligence and all that. So when I was introduced to the field of artificial intelligence. It was just one course in my, you know, curriculum. I was fascinated. I knew that, okay, this is something that I want to tinker with and understand. If we can build intelligence, if we can recreate intelligence, we can understand our own intelligence better. So that was the initial motivation. And it's to this date, you know, fascinates me from that perspective. So the fascination towards artificial intelligence, and I would say my extensive travel. I was born and brought up in India, spent around more than a decade there. I moved to Europe, again, spent around 10 plus years in Barcelona and other countries traveling. So I would say I was overexposed to people around. And I always felt very fortunate to be able to travel, to meet people, and to have, to be able to afford the things that I can. And I was seeing all around people that could not afford those things. And I really wanted to make a difference in the lives of people. So that was my personal mission. And I believe I couldn't take a better industry to kind of revolutionize.
I love it. And so I have a bunch more questions I want to ask at Cognicore, but let's start with your professional career leading up to the company. So Asia, Europe, North America, all completely different cultures. How did your time influence the way you look at business, the way you look at creating a company, nurturing your own staff and clients?
I think I have a human first approach to business and everything I do. I do not believe that is probably the, you know, best approach, or like, you know, the most successful way of doing business. But for me, that is the most gratifying way of doing business, and I believe to lead with that. So this is simply because of my, you know, the way I was brought up, the exposure that I got of meeting people. The more people that we meet, we understand their, you know, human aspects of it, and I think we would be able to relate with that. So for me, you know, people comes first. My employees come first and foremost. You know, we have always a, you know, kind of tight schedules, and you know, the employees work really hard. But I think two of the, you know, driving mottos that lead our company and all the employees are aligned around it is, one is give back to society and give back to nature. So these two things are the underlying factors, and everything that we do, we ask these two questions to make sure that, you know, we are doing something that is in interesting or relevant for giving back to society, and you know, we are not disrupting nature. I was blessed with, you know, growing up in a farmhouse, in surrounded by mountains, and I love being, you know, being around nature, and I would love to preserve that as well.
Fantastic. I love it. And I think having that vision and being able to incorporate it into your company is great. My experience.
And I have always felt that, you know, when you lead with certain vision, like, you know, people aligned with that vision always, you know, bring, come together, and you don't need extensive HR and, you know, human resource management that are artificially created. Like, you know, it is people are aligned, and, you know, I'm blessed and fortunate to have a team that is, like, you know, come a long way with us. Like, you know, in India, and my team is primarily based in India. I also have a team in the US. But it is a very competitive market. And, you know, you see people being with Cognicore for a number of years. And I'm very blessed to have that.
Words out of my mouth. You know, I agree. I think I've seen a lot of founders who have a very clear vision, and when they're able to share that, you're able to attract and more likely retain a group that makes it easier to scale because there's alignment. So, did you always know that was going to be the case, or did it work naturally?
I always knew that, you know, any decision that I make, I should have my conscience clear. Like, you know, first I wanted to practice before I preach. So everything I do, I want to make sure I am doing it first before I force anybody else to do it. So I want to lead by example. That was always like, you know, I'm someone who speaks a lot less than, you know, I act. Like, so I'm an introvert. I don't, you know, speak a lot. But people can follow my actions, you know, be it my kids, my colleagues, they know, they are fully aligned with, they're very clear, like, you know, of what I think, where my vision is. And I think it's because of my actions. So I want to go to sleep very peacefully at night. So that's one of my primary criteria. If I do something that is against my conscience, you know, I may not be able to do that. So I can run a business that is, you know, extremely successful, but, you know, compromise on my values and vision. I think that's something, you know, because of that, I sometimes feel the business owners and, you know, extremely successful business people are at the edge of these things. Like, you know, that's what I kind of came to the conclusion. I'm not sure if that is the case, but for me, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, you know, my experience has been that the necessary ingredient is faith. If there's a spiritual aspect where you believe that things will work out if you do the right thing, they generally do. I mean, the time frame may not be what you're looking for, but in the long run, I agree with you. My experience has been consistent. Do the right thing and things will work out.
Exactly. Yeah.
We were talking about before the show started, you have a doctorate. And I commend you on your commitment to learning. What did you get your PhD in?
In artificial intelligence. So it was kind of unheard of at that time when it's around 10 years back. Like, you know, not many people did PhD in artificial intelligence, but you know, I was somebody who was always clear about what I wanted to do. I know that there are a lot of people, like, you know, some of my you know, when I talk to younger people now, they are sometimes confused. And I think it's a very natural tendency to be confused at an early age. I was the opposite. I don't know why. I was always very clear what I wanted to do. And maybe I didn't explore enough, but I was fascinated by mathematics. And I always wanted to, you know, be work around it. And I had a very logical, like, you know, I could conceptualize everything that I kind of, you know, if I have a new problem, I see it in the mathematical sense. So it was amazing for me to work in that field. And artificial intelligence was something similar. I was clear I wanted to, you know, research and build this kind of systems early on, and I pursued that path. I did my PhD in from Barcelona. It was under the Artificial Intelligence Research Institute, which was under the Ministry of Sciences in Spain. We were part of a European framework project funded by the European Union, which means I got to collaborate with around six universities in six different countries in Europe and travel extensively. It was an amazing time, not only doing my research, but also learning about different cultures and interacting with people all around Europe.
That sounds amazing. And I mean, kudos to you for having the foresight to devote yourself to the space a decade ago. I'm sure there's a lot of people who wish they were in your shoes, but no time like the present. So I got some, I think you may imagine what I'm gonna ask next. What's your opinion? What does the future have in store as far as AI goes? I mean, it's been what, 2.5 years since OpenAI released ChatGPT. I don't know that it's necessarily a household name, but it's getting there. I can only imagine that in 10, 20, 30 years from now, we haven't seen anything yet. I'd love to know your opinion.
Yeah, I think AI is a, you know, as every anybody's guess, it's the next revolution that, you know, human race has encountered. And AI is going to influence and define the way, you know, humans are going to live. Our, you know, social life, our social fabric, everything is going to be affected by or influenced by AI. So I have a, like, you know, usually when people say when internet came around, when computers came around, people would say, like, you know, you are going to lose all the jobs, and, you know, everything is going to be replaced. I did not have that notion, but this time around, you know, there is a, the speed at which AI is, you know, replacing or augmenting human experience is something that we haven't seen in the previous revolutions. So I think AI is going to have an out proportioned influence on human life and work as we define today. I see personally as a this as a great thing because I'm someone who is you know always thinking about the macro aspects of human life. And one of the things that you know when I read the history when we as you know hunters and gatherers we were we did not have a schedule. We were like, you know, growing in a way that was like, you know, we could just wander around and, you know, organize our day. But then when the Industrial Revolution happened, we became kind of a cog in the wheel. I don't know if humans are meant to be that, like, you know, kind of that cog in the wheel. And all the other, you know, revolutions that followed, we became more and more, you know, kind of became slaves of that work. I think work as such is a great thing. We are all like, you know, kind of somehow should be working in one thing or the other. But AI is going to liberate us from that cog in the wheel, that slave nature of work. And our identity needs to be much more than, you know, what we associate. You know, I'm Dr. Sindhu Joseph. I have a PhD. I am a CEO and founder. I need to have a broader identity. And we as a society needs to kind of come to terms with, you know, or like, you know, understand what we want to do beyond work. What who are we as a society beyond our identity towards work? So I truly believe, you know, we need to have those kind of discussions. But that doesn't mean the work is going away as such. I think the nature of work will be, you know, redefined.
It's interesting. I agree with you. And I do think there's going to be a liberation that takes place, especially as robotics advance. And, we see the ability to transfer a lot of tasks to the robots. I am curious, though, obviously, Neuralink in its infancy. And now you see a lot of people who are talking about we haven't seen anything. Wait till there's an actual, commercialization of a human interface. Do you have an opinion yet? Net negative, net positive?
I think I have a dual mode, one that is, you know, deeply embedded in technology and one that is, you know, extremely human and natural. Like, you know, I am most myself when I'm surrounded by nature. And I feel that, you know, we had a lot of, you know, advances in technology. Like we have social media, we have all of those things that kind of bombarded our life. I think as technologists, we get excited about every incremental advancement. You know, it is a progress. It is amazing technology that we are putting it out there. One of the things that we often forget to think is like, you know, in the longer term, how that gets, you know, how that affects us, how that influences the our lives and so on. I wish, you know, people think, put more thought into it. and the Neuralink, and you know, the it was it existed much before. Like, you know, I was 20 years back, or even before I met the first cyborg. It was called a cyborg, which was like, you know, half human, half machine, where, you know, a chip was embedded into that person, and he could communicate by thinking, and, you know, make his wife's necklace change color and things like that. So it was amazing to see that person face to face 20 plus years back. So I think we always were fascinated by that technology, and it would continue to evolve. It has a huge place in health, like, you know, in bridging the gap between, like, you know, if you have a certain defects, you have, you know, those problems can be, you know, very well solved with those technologies. Personally, I don't want to meddle with, you know, human brain, if, you know, just to improve and augment our capability. It is something that I feel natural, you know, fascinated by nature and our natural life, and I feel there are consequences that we don't see that might exist if we just look at the technological side of it.
Yeah, I think there's a fork in the road coming, and you're going to find a lot of people on your side, and then there's going to be a whole host of people who think they're going to have to get implants in order to be competitive.
And yeah, it is going to be hard to compete, you know, if you have somebody who is implanted the entire, you know, Wikipedia into their brain, and, you know, or even ChatGPT into their brain. So it's going to be amazing to see how that is going to play out. But I think we are, you know, playing too much into our own life and existence, and it's not always proven to be the right. You know, humans are not always sensible from that standpoint.
If past is prologue, I agree. Before I come back to Cognicore, if there are any members of our audience, students or professionals who are interested in pursuing artificial intelligence and they need to start learning, where would you suggest they start?
Yeah, today there are, like, you know, more than sufficient means in the, like, you know, in the internet for people to start. I feel, you know, studying a formal degree in, you know, data sciences or AI itself or computer science with certain specialization in artificial intelligence is a great idea. But, you know, people who have passed that stage, I think there are a huge number of online resources available. And one thing that the evolution of the technology itself done to us is, like, we don't need to understand a lot of AI to be able to, you know, I kind of lose my relevance now, because we don't need AI scientists to work with AI systems or build AI systems and all that. So one of the places that I always recommend young people and students to kind of focus their attention on the domain knowledge. That is something that, you know, AI becomes a commodity. Like, you know, you can really build those systems once you know what to build. So if you are interested in studying geography, for example, or, like, you know, build a system that manages geographical information and things like that, you need to first understand the layers of the those geographical aspects better. Or, you know, even in my own domain, like financial services, I couldn't build a copilot for financial advisors without knowing the you know, nuances of wealth management. So learning that domain is your biggest asset. And it's not sufficient to say, you know, I can ask any questions to ChatGPT and it would give me an answer. Why should I learn that? But actually doing and actually practicing that domain and learning and understanding has a different feel, different level of expertise that you need, you will gain, and you can apply AI to that. So I would say AI exposure is amazing, but combine that with the domain skill, domain knowledge.
You know, I think that makes great sense. And the way as I listen to you, the way I'm thinking about it is appreciate there's a difference between AI as a tool, and you can spend time there. And there are lots of companies who are focused on the development of tools, but understand there's also the application. And every single industry can benefit, I'm sure, could benefit from artificial intelligence. It's just how are you going to apply the tool? So make a decision of, you know, or at least be cognizant of, you have a choice. Accumulate domain.
And also the, like, you know, we had a specific software industry before, because software was made by specialized teams, be it for any industry. So we had a wing of software engineers who are building for different industries. Now AI has made it so easy for people who has domain knowledge to build software. So the biggest threat that software engineers and AI engineers created is for themselves. Like, you know, that they are the ones who are going away first, in, and you know, the every industry is going to absorb building systems on their own, or like, you know, domain specific companies are going to build, or like domain specialized tech, vertical tech is going to take over, because they need to understand the domain and they build for the domain. So I think there is a significant shift coming there.
You know, it's interesting to see if the pendulum swings back. I was looking at someone had published the percentage of doctorates or founders with doctorates in the last 3 or 4 years of Y Combinator cohorts, and it's been increasing. But I mean, you make a great point. It, you know, does the technology advance so fast that it kind of obviates?
One example I can give, previously, maybe few years, up to few years back, which were the, you know, most wanted, most sexiest companies in the US. Like, if I were the top engineer, I would be going to Google's, Apple's, Nvidia's of the world. Today, where would they go? They would, you know, there was a recent article in Wall Street where, you know, the now the top talent is moving to financial services, Morgan Stanley's, JP Morgan's of the world. So, and I, you know, that's just the creamy layer. And now, like, you know, as every industry will figure that out, that they can actually build their own tech, because it's so easy to, you know, write code and build technology and so on. So I think the talent would get attracted there. So yes, it's true that, you know, people with, you still need AI engineers and, you know, core companies to build more technology and, you know, similar next revolution of maybe not AI, maybe blockchain, maybe something else. But there is a sufficient shift in the application layer to those domains.
It makes good sense. And Cognicore is a great example. So I got some questions on the product. In simplest terms, financial advisors, usually when they're having conversations with their clients, it's around return, risk, time horizon being, you know, three key variables. Understanding that can be very personal, depending on who the client is. How is Cognicore bridging the gap between the advisor's domain expertise and the unique profile of the individual clients?
Yeah, so let me, you know, take that back a little bit, to talk about the industry. So wealth management has been, like, you know, although there is a huge AUM that is managed by this industry, it's been kind of neglected by the mainstream development. And one reason is, you know, it's highly regulated. You simply cannot put a technology there and expect it to take off, because there is huge amount of regulation around it. And there are also very archaic systems that, you know, that are run on COBOL and other, you know, legacy platforms that is still working today, that's doing the trading in seconds and microseconds and all that. So with that context, what kind of was built around the wealth industry was a very highly fragmented tech stack. So financial advisors today manage their clients by switching between around 10 systems. That is the cream layer. And then if they want to kind of, you know, go a little bit deeper, there is 50 other platforms that they need to kind of swivel chair to kind of understand what is happening with their client household. There is a lot of what I call the LLM babies or the new AI companies that are, you know, mushrooming out. That produces, it is all fast growing, but, you know, they focus on a point solution, which is, do you want a note taker for financial advisors? You have an AI note taker. You want a scheduler for financial advisors? You have an AI scheduler. You want an onboarding solution? You have an AI onboarding platform. So these kind of point solutions. So I think the understanding of AI for many is okay, I can build these things, and that is going to, you know, help in some way, but it is also going to create another layer of fragmentation. So we are dealing with a tech fragmented tech stack that was built in the last couple of decades. In another 20 years, we will find, instead of 10 platforms, we would find 25 platforms. That is AI created tech fragmentation, AI fragmentation. So what Cognicore's approach is, not to create that, you know, AI fragmentation. AI is capable of much bigger things. And instead of using it as a Ferrari, people use it as a car to drive to their grocery store and things like that. So I want to use its full potential and use AI to federate between these fragmented systems to create a unified intelligence layer. We pull data from, you know, let's say around 5, 6, 7 core systems, like your financial planning system, your portfolio management system, your custodian platform, your CRM, your interaction data, your compliance system. So AI has the ability to process both structured, unstructured, semi-structured, everything in between. So you can read this information in real time, and then provide a unified 360 view of the client household in front of the advisor. So imagine an advisor going into a meeting in 2 hours. They can simply do one click, and this dashboard, amazing dashboard, will appear in front of the advisor that will give the client, give the advisor an overview of everything that is happening in the client household's life. Starting with, you know, what's the name of the pet, to what are their long-term investment priorities? Do they have any health risks that are, you know, imminent, or do they have any vacation plans? How are they doing in terms of cash flow? Will they have sufficient income in retirement? All of these things in one single dashboard, and you can also interact with it, ask questions. Does my client have any gap in insurance? Did they have any tax loss, tax gain events that, you know, I should be aware of? So you can interact with it and really create that holistic experience, health, financials, interest, personal aspects, everything built together. So I think it would be an amazing partner tool for financial advisors that, you know, they can create that personalized advice. So although financial advice is supposed to be like, you know, studying the household and providing a really personal advice, the state of the art is different. Like, you know, you have a most advisors, you have a 60-40 allocation. Your assumption is every client will live up to 90 years, and you plan based on that. AI can change all that. AI can really create a holistic view of the household that provide recommendations, highlight opportunities, highlight risks. That, of course, the advisors can vet these things and make sure, like, you know, it is relevant for the conversation or relevant immediately, and, you know, pick and choose. But these are created by the AI system. And, you know, you imagine the scale at which this personalized advice can go.
So, I mean, as I listen to you, it makes complete sense that there are a whole host of fragmented data silos that need to be consolidated in order to create a more accurate profile of a household. And then by programming what the domain knowledge of an advisor, shorten the amount of time that it takes to at least get to the point where you can start providing counsel. I'm curious, if you have avatars on your roadmap to, because I would imagine one of the longest poles in the tent is simply the time that an advisor needs to spend with a client, but an avatar could help assist solve a portion of that as well.
Yeah, I am I won't leave the last mile to the humans. And I think, you know, we are great at that. That's one of the concerns that I have with, you know, robo advising and all that. Like, you know, while AI can do a lot of it, I think, you know, humans have certain abilities, certain compassion, certain empathy that can, you know, package all of this. Like, you know, we are great communicators from that standpoint, and we can, you know, we have certain sense that we can make sure that, you know, certain things are communicated, certain things are should not be, and you know, how to package information. So I think humans should be the deliverer of information, and, you know, how to interact with that household and person, while you know, AI does a lot of other things.
In hindsight, I don't think I should have asked that, because I should have anticipated your response, just knowing how strong you feel about us as being humans. So you're very consistent.
Yeah, I am.
Sindhu, I've genuinely enjoyed having you on the podcast. Tremendous amount of insights. Thank you for sharing. Before we wrap up, one of the questions I love is just kind of it's a retrospective. If you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with yourself when you were younger, what would you share?
I would say I was very naive. Like, you know, while I did have a lot of excitement about the power of technology and what is the possibility, one of the, you know, characteristics of a founder, I guess, is also the naivety. Like, you know, not knowing enough to believe in your stupid visions of the future. And you know, if you knew enough, like, you know, if you knew every detail of what would happen, you probably wouldn't have, you know, jumped into that risk taking. So I think every risk taker is somewhere between that naive, not knowing enough, and stays at a higher level than, you know, someone who's a detailed oriented engineer who knows every single, you know, details about that. So they will never take that risk. When I started Cognicor, my husband told me that, Sindhu, do you know that, you know, less than 1% of the companies succeed, and you need to have all of this, like, you know, capabilities and all of this team, everything, the market conditions to be successful. I knew nothing about any of these things. And because I did not know, I did not believe him. Or, like, you know, I decided I don't care. And I decided to jump into it. If I knew what I know now, I probably never would have started this company. So I think it is a blessing in disguise. Like, you know, I really wanted to, you know, follow my passion, and I have always done that, no matter what the risks are. Not knowing enough was one of the blessings that I had. I don't know if every founder would say that, but you know, for me, it was one of the biggest things that allowed me to having the background I had. I had a PhD in AI with no business background. I had some exposure to enterprise working, but other than that, nothing, no network. So having my background, believing in the vision, it was impossible for me to start a company if I knew more. So I would say that well done, like, you know.
Well, it's inspirational, and it sounds like you have a lot of people on the team who are really happy you didn't know back then what you know now, because they may not be building Cognicore. So congrats. Last question before we wrap up. Anyone in your career or network who's had a significant impact on you and your life that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I do have a few people that I think a lot of people have influenced and helped me in this journey. It was I wouldn't say it was easy. So it was really a lot of hard work, you know, continued, sustained determination. So everything that goes into persistence, that goes into the founder's life. And without these people, like, you know, it wouldn't have been even possible. So I would like to start with my, you know, my parents, my family, who had an amazing amount of belief in me, in the sense, like, you know, they let me be myself and take any kind of risks that that is possible. My father told me after, when I was 15 years old, you know, just go out and go outside and go to the big cities and learn and all that. Like, and usually people don't do that in our, you know, in our small hill station village. He just kind of threw me out of the house almost and kind of made me fly. I think one of his words that I would always remember is, live simply, have higher level of thought. So that was always something that I live by. Always have a simple life, but you know, your thought should always be at a higher level. That was one. I would always respect my family for giving that opportunity. I don't think everybody would get that opportunity. One of the other people, when I came to the US, there was a VC firm that really took us into their fold. They are called 630 Ventures, and Atul Kamra is the managing director. He has a very, very calm demeanor, and you know, you would think he's a quiet person, but everything that he does is very, very strategic. If you, you know, he might, you know, call me up and say, Sindhu, you know, just talk to that person, or like, you know, just reach out to this firm. And I wouldn't find any reason why he's saying that. But, you know, once I did 6 steps down the line, I would realize, you know, how it all connected. So one of the, you know, strongest strategy person that I have seen and I think, you know, having that ability to make those connectivity was amazing. So, you know, these are two people that I would say, like, you know, has hugely influenced. There are a lot of people that helped me, but I just wanted to shout out to these two.
Well, it sounds like they have something in common, and they both have a tremendous amount of confidence in you. And it sounds like for great reason. Sindhu, thank you again. If there are any members of our audience who would like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
They can reach out to me, sindhu@cognicore.com, or go to the website, you know, just contact us. LinkedIn is amazing, so I always respond on LinkedIn. So these are easy ways to connect.
Fantastic. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Sindhu Joseph, founder and CEO of Cognicore. Again, Sindhu, appreciate your time and sharing your perspective with us.
Thank you so much. It was amazing to be here.
My pleasure. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.